This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Gem on FUBAR Radio. Well, we know where we're going, but we don't know where we've been. And we know what we're knowing, but we can't say what we've seen.
Well done, America. The people of Iowa have spoken and Donald Trump has been thumped. His hopes of getting into the White House have slumped. and into the lead, Ted Cruz has jumped. No, that's enough of that now. Despite his bluster about how he'd win, the idiot property billionaire was beaten into second place by evangelical Senator Cruz overnight in America's first primary. That was despite tweeting a couple of times in the past that no one remembers who came in second. Well, we're all going to remember this, Donald. It's you. The other big story coming out of Iowa, of course, before the US electoral bandwagon rolls into New Hampshire next Tuesday, is that the 74-year-old firebrand left-winger Bernie Sanders, seems a bit like Jeremy Corbyn in many ways, has come from nowhere to virtually tie with Hillary Clinton in what's been branded a victory against the establishment. But what does it all mean? Well, we'll see. My co-presenter, comedian Tiernan Dueb, and paper reviewer Simon Usborne from The Independent will, or probably won't, be able to unravel it in the next couple of hours. Hello, gents.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good to have you here. Good to have you here. They'll also be turning their so-called expert eye to all the other stories that are making the papers, and some that haven't between now and midday. Mr. Usborne from The Independent, how are you, my friend?
Thanks for joining. Very happy to be here.
How's life?
Life is very good. So-called expert, I think, is right. We'll soon discover. Is that time of year or time every 4 years where everyone races to find out what the hell is going on in the US election system?
It's confusing.
It's highly confusing. I imagine to Americans too, or I hope so.
Tiernan Dueb, you do a political podcast, which is called?
It's called The Partly Political Broadcast, where I ramble on. This is the thing, is I'm not an expert on anything, so I just sort of ramble on as best as I can as little understanding as I've got about everything.
But it's mostly British politics.
It's mostly British politics. Yeah, I really don't have much of a clue about US politics.
Oh, good.
Yeah, well, they've got a Congress and a Senate, and then what was this? A couscous? An Iowa couscous? I have
couscous,
no idea.
Yes.
No idea what's going on. It all sounds very confusing.
Simon Usborne, you're from The Independent. You know all about couscous.
I do know. It's one of my favourite foods. A vegetarian household to boot.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Not me, but my wife.
Quinoa too? You like a bit of quinoa?
Yeah, I'm very, very keen, yeah.
Keen on quinoa. Yes, okay. Well, we'll be chatting a little bit about that afterwards. I mean, it's come a bit too late to make the paper, Simon. It's one of those annoying... That's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit of a nightmare for news desks, the US election, because things tend to go late, and it's interesting seeing how different papers have kind of either glossed over it or said following last night's dramatic result.
Very selfish of them to do that. They should really put their election on so that UK papers can get all the scoops.
They should time it specifically.
Absolutely.
For us.
Well, I mean, The Sun, obviously, so it's gone in its own way about how Adele banned Trump from using her song
The Independent done that too. Yeah, Adele apparently unhappy that Trump, who is a fan, apparently muscled into one of Adele's concerts in New York recently.
Muscled in?
It's kind of jumped the queue. You can imagine how he might do that.
Yeah. Why didn't he just buy a ticket? I mean, he's a billionaire.
I know, he probably owns the venue.
It's not that
venue.
Hard to muscle into an Adele concert, is it? I mean, I bet the queue's not that muscly to begin with. They're probably not the scariest.
That's true. Although, you know, there's security. I think that's probably the point. But, you know, could have just bought one off a tap.
Yeah.
Why are you muscling in? Yeah. Don't be a prick, Trump. Like, buy a ticket like everybody else. Stop muscling in. But they've obviously gone for that, which is not perhaps... You've got to do what you can when the results are coming in at 4 or 5 in the morning.
Although I would strongly recommend that everyone consult their copy of The Independent, because all your listeners will be readers. There's a very good explainer of this with a timeline of how the whole system works. And actually, when you read it, it's not as mad as it sounds, but on the face of it,
well, I tell you what, why don't you give us a quick rundown now?
A full rundown.
No, okay. Well, it's effectively what it is. This is the time when you vote for either a Republican or a Democrat voter, and you vote for one of X choices for them to be the nomination that's going to run against each other, and that's going to come later when the country votes on the whole thing.
Yeah, and it goes insane. This is the first time that anyone has actually put, you know, their tick on a box, or in this case, stood in a corner of a room in Iowa, because they have a weird system there, to say who they want to be their candidate.
They can stand in a corner.
What system have they got?
Apparently this is what, because you have caucuses and
peeing
primaries.
onto a ballot paper.
And in these caucuses in the states that have them, it's literally you go and stand in a gymnasium or a town hall or whatever, and you stand in one corner or the other for your preferred candidate, and then someone counts the people standing.
That's mental.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's almost like you're being punished for choosing whoever you like to go stand in the corner.
There's no hiding. from that, is there? I mean, you know, that's the whole point with voting. It's meant to be. It's meant to be like, you know, you could.
Yeah, there's no anonymity.
Don't tell anybody. Difficult not to tell anyone when you're stood in a corner with a bunch of other supporters of said person.
And in the case of the Democrat, where it's a much tighter race between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, apparently in some of the cases it was too close to call, and so a dice was produced.
Wow.
Or not a dice, sorry, a coin was produced and tossed to decide who would, you know, nudge it in each of six different cases. And in each of the six cases, Hillary Clinton won the coin toss.
So luck should have gone for a tiebreaker poem or something.
Yeah. Rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah.
Looking back on the electoral race, do you remember that time when I became president on the back of spinning a coin? Yeah. I do remember that. See, it was a good day. I won six in a row, actually. I do remember that. So Hillary Clinton won six in a row. Is that correct?
In the cases where it was very close and there was a coin toss, she apparently won all six. And so there'll probably be conspiracy theories.
It's an establishment conspiracy. Maybe, it's an establishment conspiracy.
Maybe with a husband like hers, I suppose she's quite good at tossing. So.
Hey! It's FUBAR Radio, but we can say that sort of thing. But of course, Bernie Sanders, she didn't have a great night apart from winning the coin toss, because Bernie Sanders came from way behind. He was nowhere, and he's done a grassroots campaign in many ways like Jeremy Corbyn. And they pretty much tied on 50%.
He's cool level.
She's going to have a tough fight now.
She is. And what a lot of people say about Iowa, because although it's a quirk of the system that they do it first, and it's a very small state, and it's not a particularly diverse state by any stretch, people talk about it as momentum, and the people who have momentum on that vote tend to do well. So in this case, Sanders has the momentum. And also Marco Rubio, who almost caught up with Trump in second place on the Republican side, he's done much better than expected. And so attention is on those guys as much as, you know, the Trump and Clinton.
And Tien, you're not an expert on the US election. I mean, thank God we've got Simon here. That's all I'm saying.
Fully on reading on the tube this morning.
Well, look, it's more than us two have managed. So
it's good. I was just on Twitter. You've done very well.
Thank you very much for doing so, Simon. At least one of us did. Tien, in the regard that you're not an expert, you are more of an expert on the British system. Do you think that Sanders is similar to Corbyn in that he's that sort of anti-capitalist, anti-big business, anti-big banks, has come to take on the establishment in this? Is there parallels of Corbyn here?
Yeah, there's definitely.
And what does it say about the world, I suppose?
Well, I think it's sadly not just Sanders. I think it's also Trump as well. It's that whole America looking for something else. Mm. You know, this kind of desperate need for a bit of a change in the system. And I think you're right. I think it's the same everywhere. We're all going, we're sick of the politics.
And it's the same, I guess, that's seen Trump perform so well up until this point, obviously, but in the polls.
Yeah, that shows how desperate people are, doesn't it? They go, things are so bad. We need this bag of bluster with a face on it. You know, that's... It's depressing, isn't it?
That's a lovely turn of phrase. Have you ever used that before?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you should do again.
I will.
That was excellent. Also coming up on the show, we're going to be looking at all sorts of stuff, but we're going to be looking ahead at the Six Nations Rugby Tournament, which starts this weekend. Hopefully we'll have Wales rugby legend Yestyn Harris on the phone. As I say, loads and loads of other stuff, phoners, all that sort of thing. But I've got a question for you. I want you to get in touch. You might have seen it, certainly on the front page of The Mirror, which we'll come into in a bit. British former heavyweight champion Frank Bruno wants to return to the ring at the age of 54. That's remarkable. Bruno, who has not fought since being knocked out by Mike Tyson in 1996, that's 20 years, has been suffering bipolar disorder in recent years and said, "I can't sit down and let these so-called promoters say Anthony Joshua can knock me out in two rounds when I'm not even dead." Asked if it was a good idea, Bruno replied, "I haven't got a choice." Meanwhile, Susan Sarandon got slated at the Screen Actors Guild for wearing a top that showed a lot of cleavage. Despite being 69, I thought she looked smashing, but there you go. She got a lot of grief on Twitter for that. But I want to hear from you about what you've done lately where you thought, nah, you know what, I'm way too old to be doing this. What I've done, I have recently bought some decks and I've started to mix happy hardcore. So, age 33, that's what I've done that I'm probably too old to be doing, but I'm enjoying it all the same. Get in touch with yours, Tom at FoodBarRadio.com, tweet us at FoodBarRadio, call us on 0330-223-0200. That number again, 0330-223-0200. Chaps, I'll be coming to you with your thoughts. Get your thinking caps on. What are you doing that you're too old to do? Probably sitting in a FUBAR radio studio talking nonsense with me is one of them, but there you go. Right, we'll play a song, Small Town Boy by Bronski Beat, and we'll come back after this and we'll be talking about going through the front pages and other stories like that. It's FUBAR Radio here.
Bar Radio.
There you go, that's another one of our edgy idents. It is Foobar Radio, I'm Tom Latcham, it's 10:19, we're not edgy. Simon Osborne from The Independent, my pay-per-view, and my co-presenter for the day, Tiernan Duv. Definitely not edgy.
Very well-rounded.
Certainly neither of us are edgy at all. Simon Osborne, probably more so.
Well, that's saying something if that's the case.
Yeah. Oh,
does
dear.
Not reflect well on either of you.
No, it doesn't, but there you go. Front pages then. So none of them particularly gripping or exciting today, but as is the way we do it on the show, we'll tell you what they are anyway.
Yeah.
Simon, what are they saying?
I think it's one of those days where probably the biggest story in town is the whole Cameron EU negotiations, but then papers have decided whether to go with that and then how to go with it, and others have decided maybe that's just a bit too boring to put on the front, so we'll try and make something else work with varying degrees of success.
What did The Independent do?
Well, we're very successful front page. I'll just grab it.
Of course.
It's a thing about...
it's very successful. What was it again?
it's
not one of yours then, was it?
Slightly worthy but important stories about Oxbridge academics teaming up to say that those universities should end their investments in fossil fuels. It's not going to set the world alight, but yeah. It's an issue.
It's not going to set the world alight. That is the problem with fossil fuels.
Do you ever get a splash on The Independent?
Very rarely. I'm a feature writer.
We're
usually sort of consigned to the features pages and sort of supposed to write slightly different stuff. But occasionally you make it.
You've
into
had a red hot
scorcher. Yeah, a bit of, Tory bullying.
Very good.
Maldives, bizarrely, I've become a sort of
expert.
Unofficial Maldives correspondent.
Have you been?
I did go, yeah.
For the indie?
No, it was sort of for the indie, yeah. It's for one of our magazines, but then it led to a whole kind of interest in the weird politics there.
I went to the Maldives with work as well.
Did you?
I was chasing Katie Price.
Oh, yeah.
So someone set up a comedy gig in the Maldives, please? Hurry up.
The two faces of journalism. You went to look at the probably the issues that are going on
into
in their government.
Ex-president, yeah.
Yeah, and I was going because Katie Price had split up with Peter Andrews. So, but we both went. So that's all that matters, doesn't it, ultimately? So in terms of Europe, what are the papers saying, Simon? Cameron's done a deal, or he'll have you believe. I don't think the papers are as positive as he'd like us to be.
Not all of them. I mean, the Mail are probably the most outspoken in suggesting that it's not the deal that he is trumping it to be. Is that it then, Mr. Cameron? Is the headline on the Mail. PM stitches up deal for Britain to block EU laws, but critics say it's just window dressing. And the biggest argument for it being window dressing seems to be that the deal that he's done is for this red card system where nations would be able to club together and stop EU legislation when each country or a club of countries decides it's not in their interest. But what it doesn't tackle is, for a lot of papers, the most important thing, and that's immigration. And his vow to stop in-work benefits for 4 years for newcomers. There's an argument to be had there.
Daniel Hannan, who's a fan of David Cameron, he's also the Conservative MEP for the South East of England, says this emergency break thing is a scam that takes us all for fools, Tin. Have you an opinion on it?
Yeah, I think it's all nonsense. that's my opinion. Well, because I was looking into it, and for a start, the EU migrants don't make up... they make up an incredibly small percentage of people in this country anyway, and most of them are working. So the fact that they're some sort of benefit tourists or whatever is ridiculous. But the Cameron's not going to manage to get anything out of the EU because of it. No one's willing to block free movement or borders, none of the other countries. I mean, I also wonder if he did go through with it and manage to stop all free movement in Europe, would all the Brits in Spain have to come back? Because I'd much prefer hardworking EU migrants than a load of lazy Costa del Sol
criminals.
Loungers. Criminals, exactly, yeah.
Criminals. Good honest criminals, that's what we call them. I mean, it is a difficulty for them, isn't it? Because no one's going to go, no one wants to, no one's rushing, knocking down the door to go and live in Bulgaria to claim their benefits. Maybe we should. Maybe we should move to Bulgaria.
Yeah, well, apparently I think we've got 2.3 million EU migrants over here, something like that. And there's about 2.2 million UK migrants in Europe. So really? we just swap out. You know, yeah. we'd still be full, if people say. You know, it doesn't make any difference. But also, I think part of what Cameron wants to do this reform is he wants to make sure that the City of London is still a tax haven, is a protected tax haven. I don't want that. I don't want him to renegotiate that. I don't see why we're campaigning for him to pull this through. You know, it's crazy, especially after the week with Google.
Google. Well, there's another story about Facebook and Google. We'll come to later about how the way they've paid their taxes or not going to pay their taxes. In fact, why don't we discuss it now? Because it's on the front page of the Times. Do you have that, Simon?
No, I think Tina's got the Times.
There you go.
Yes, indeed.
On the.
They're ready to pay $2 billion in tax, but not in the UK. Which, to be fair, makes sense. You wouldn't pay dollars in the UK.
No, this is very true. another way around it, right? What are they doing? Because they're based in Ireland, this is part
they're
of...
They're doing what Google are doing, and yeah, claiming that their Irish sort of HQ means that that's where they should pay their taxes. And Facebook and Google, but you know, they're certainly not alone in using these loopholes. But because they're massive, and the company Alphabet that owns Google, I think has just overtaken Facebook in the sort of massive company stakes. They get, you know, quite rightly a lot of the attention. And yeah, this is a news story in the front of the Times about Facebook kind of doing more or less the same thing.
And there's another story in the paper that more 18-year-olds on Facebook than are on the electoral roll.
Wow. Yeah, I saw that. Although that's one of those sort of pointless. It's like saying,
yeah,
it's like saying there are more, you know, there are more 11-year-olds in schools than there are
teachers.
Right-wingers
do that. They go like, "Why are we paying more money on prisons than old people?" It's apples and pears, isn't it?
Yeah, Facebook is popular with 18-year-olds.
Well, I think if US elections can work by standing in a corner, we should definitely do ours on Facebook. I'm very up for that.
Well, online voting.
Well, right? I certainly think... Well, we had Rick Edwards on the show a while ago, and he said that the future has to be online voting. And I can't imagine why. I mean, that would be... if anyone's looking to invest in something, invest in some companies that do online voting. Because
it's totally right. It's certainly more reliable than, you know, the systems that have produced, you know, the hanging chads and all that last time. Coin tosses. It's just remarkable.
That's what we should take it back to, coin tosses. That's what I think we should do more of. The Sun says it's a big fat joke. GPs should be paid extra for getting fat patients to sign up to diets on slimming clubs. And NHS Watchdog claims that's dull. And the Mirror goes with Frank Bruno, too, which we mentioned in our question today. Frank Bruno planning his ring return. Frank Warren, boxing promoter, says, "Don't fight again, you will die." And we've got on the line our boxing expert, Steve Lissies. Hello, Steve, how are you?
I'm all right. Yourself, Tom?
I'm good, thank you. So, what do you make of Frank Bruno returning to the ring or not, as the case may be?
It's pretty disturbing to see the interview on this morning, yesterday, and with him talking of what else can he do. There's absolutely no way he should be allowed into a boxing ring. Thankfully, you know, he is serious, because he actually sent papers to the British Boxing Board of Control, who don't usually say a lot publicly, but when Frank went public himself yesterday, they moved to say they would not license him, which is spot on. But it doesn't mean to say that there'll be someone, other unscrupulous governing body, sanctioning body, who would license him. What great that a sport as boxing is, and how kind it's been to me, and I love it, there is a seedy underbelly to it, shall we still say.
And what did you think when you saw Frank Bruno on this morning, yesterday, giving his interview? There were people on Twitter said that he appeared to be manic. I mean, he's obviously had issues with bipolar disorder. He's been sectioned and various things. What did you make of his appearance?
Well, I was quite disturbed, mainly by when he said about, you know, he told me that perhaps it wasn't all right with Frank when he said, "What else can I do? You know, this is what I have to do," when he was making those remarks to Philip Schofield. That was the most disturbing thing. And I still think with Frank, like so many boxers, sportsmen in general, boxers, I feel more than anybody, once it goes away and leaves him, like it left him that night when he walks out of the ring against Mike Tyson for the second time, battered and bloodied, when it left him and he's not hearing those shouts of "Bruno, Bruno" anymore, they miss it. He misses that limelight. And I think that's got a lot to do with Frank's problems. And it's brought them, you know, he's had issues. I think his marriage broke down as well. It doesn't help that these things, but I think missing that adulation of boxing has a lot to do with his problems. And someone like Frank would be, you know, he's a national treasure, and he would be much better served, you know, highlighting the problems, you know, with mental illness that the government perhaps ignore.
Mm.
He'd be much better served doing that than getting back in a boxing ring, because
Steve, can you see him getting back in a boxing ring? I know, obviously, the British Boxing Board of Control have said that they won't sanction it, but as we know, other places will. Can you genuinely see him getting back in a boxing ring?
I don't now. I really don't. Because there was that quote from the agent yesterday afternoon where, I think it was Dave Davis, his agent, said that we spoke with the British Boxing Board of Control, they will not give Frank a licence. Now, usually an agent would say, we're going to look elsewhere. Now, there are other governing bodies in Britain now. There's a Maltese Boxing Commission, a German Boxing Association. I won't bore you with the facts of how they've ended up here, but you know, these are the sort of people who may reach out to Frank, because, you know, as much as boxing people like myself will be against this, there will be casual boxing fans who will pay for the macabre spectre of seeing Frank Bruno at 54 get in the boxing ring again. And I was surprised that David Hay wasn't necessarily against it when I saw him on TV last night, suggesting that Frank could perhaps find another 54-year-old to box. That's not what it's all about. I mean, Frank might look a magnificent specimen, as he did with these pictures with Ricky Hatton that were released last week, but there's no way he's right for a boxing ring. Mm. And even the worst heavyweight in Britain right now, who's maybe had one win and 20 losses, would beat him. It's just where he is in his life. It's a young man's sport, and he's not physically or mentally up to boxing again, Tom.
Depressing. Thanks, Steve, for joining us, mate.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. That's Steve Lillis on the macabre spectacle that would be a Frank Bruno comeback if it does happen at the age of 24. On regards to that, we've been asking the question of the day, given that he hasn't fought since 1996. He's 54, he's got bipolar, Frank Bruno, and he wants to come back. What have you done lately where you've just thought, I'm too old for this? Tom at FUBARadio.com. Tweet us at FUBARadio. Call us on 0330 223 0200. That number, 0330 223 0200. We'll read some of those out later. And in honour of Frank Bruno coming back in, this is Gangstar taking a rest. Now what you hear is not a test. 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 Well, goodness gracious, let me just take this time out to pull a rhyme out and update this for you and yours, simply because some MCs have luck but suck, so I pluck them like feathers on the back of a chicken, cause I'm mad like a bit when my man's so sick em. Positive is the mind state, but it can still mean that I will kick a ill, malicious like mean rap. Suckers, they force me to knock them all out, and they think they know things like what I'm about, and they try to analyze, criticize, scandalize, the outcome is death. Don't ask me to sympathize, realize that I'm not to be played with. I flip so fast, you won't know I'm the same kid. I'm tired and fed with all the weak stuff said, all that phony baloney that went out like pro kids. You've got no list, so you shoot blanks. It's me, the crowd thanks, as I step to the top ranks, banking my money and investing it wisely, snatching up chunks when they try to sneak by me. I'm the dominant one, call me the prominent one, and as I'm speaking, I'll be bombing the dumb. Deaf and blind, cause I was born with a sharp mind, eating and seized with ease like it's lunchtime or crunch time. When they get done without warning, I bust that butt from nighttime till morning. Your song's boring, and so I'm scoring much points, cause when it's time to throw joints, I cause havoc. The mic I grab is like savage, I invade the stage and make you get off. The force is like a 3-8 blowing your head off, and that's just in case you might be wearing a vest, cause it's simply a pest in this mess. I suggest you take a rest. Never sleep, son, deep one or two of these lines, yeah. Arranged by a great brain, delivering rhymes clear and concise with a nice dope voice, and killing a face like a taste of some poison. Punks are thinking they're all of that, their voices are all flat, they're finding an end in the whack rapper's almanac. Me follow that hollow crap, no way, Jose. I'll seek out a better sound to something premier plays. Days will go by and soon you'll know why. MCs like me will rise like the Enterprise. Starship headed straight for the target destination, a place where no perpetration is permitted. The guru's with it to explain how some MCs are scared to ride in a 4 train or any other train in the city for that matter, playing a role that they stole like they're batter. But I know they ain't, so I'll paint the real picture. My vocals go solo and like a bolo I'll hit ya, square in your face or crack the ribs in your chest, cause you thought your off-brand jam was the best. You fast
rush, cause you guess people would be impressed. I'm gonna bust that bubble on the double.
Make the rest.
Tick, 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 tick. Tick, 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 tick. Tick, 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 tick. Take a breath. Tick, 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 tick. Tick, 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 tick. Tick, 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 tick. Take a breath. Sit back and reflect, ponder and chill out. Rhymes like daggers make blood spill out. But you can't blame me for bringing disaster. With all these ducks claiming that they're the masters, only thing they mastered is how to get whacker. As I roll uphill, they roll downhill faster. Now they're wondering how they lost their touch. Wanna buy my rhymes, but mine cost too much. I'm the innovative one, call me the creative one. And I won't stop till the job is done. All the slobs just run when I come to get some. Cause they know better than to challenge this go-getter. They get bust, you can trust, cause I won't let a booty-ass rapper get wins against me. I guarantee that I won't act friendly. Cause crabs have a nerve and deserve to get whipped on. Their girls get kissed on while they get flipped on. I slaughter and slay or slap them up quick. Cause the lyrics they kick make me seriously sick. No substance, no value, but nevertheless they're getting daytime play. But I still say they should
take a rest.
Tick, 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 tick. Tick, 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 tick.
Radio presents
Harriet Rose.
I'm Harriet Rose. My brand new show starts on Tuesday, 1 till 4. I'll be bringing you the hottest new music around. Plus, we're going to be chatting to the artist, hearing live performances and reviewing, well, just about anything. So don't forget to listen. See you next Tuesday.
Every Tuesday.
Harriet Rose.
From 1 p.m. on FUBAR Radio.
That's Tuesday. Harriet Rose. After this, ish. We're going till 12, but it's on after that. So, new show, tune in, sounds probably quite good. Simon Osborne from The Independent, my paper reviewer, and my co-presenter TNN Duab, comedian and podcaster now.
Can I add that to my CV?
You can add what you want to your CV, mate, yourself employed.
Oh, brilliant. I'm going to be a general.
Masturbator general.
That ruins it.
That's what us freelancers do. Let's not pretend there's anything different. So I've been asking you what you've done recently, where you thought, you know what, I'm too old for this. Ask me to get in touch, tom@fubarradio.com, tweet us at FUBAR Radio. Matt says, I've been trying to convince myself that I'm too old for work. Does that count? No, because I don't. I've seen your photo and you're not old enough. Rob on Twitter said, pull the shoulder muscle getting the windsurfing kit down from the garage, hashtag old man of the sea. And Ian on Twitter says, Twitter. So there you go. That's what all those people are too old for, apparently. Tiennan, what have you been doing when you're like, oh, I'm just too old to be doing this? Podcasting, perhaps?
Yeah, everything. Everything that involves just any booze, any food, any late nights. I had a particularly sad moment recently where I was getting rid of some CDs just to try and tidy up my flat, and I found an old Cypress Hill CD that I used to love when I was a teenager, and I put it on thinking I'm sure I still love this, and I played it, and all the way through I could just think of he's got such a stupid voice. Why is he putting on a stupid voice all the time?
Too old for Cypress Hill.
That's sad, isn't it?
My brother had a poster with all the rap stars from not all the rap stars from history, because that'd be it wasn't like the Bayer Tapestry, but all the big ones, and he had that up until he was like 20. He also had a Friends one that was up until he was again
those
about
two
20
go together, yeah.
Well, don't bring, you know, and also if you're going to bring my girls back, that's me Friends poster there. Another friend of mine had a rabbit until he was 21, because he failed to get into, maybe a bit older, but he failed to get into, he was 14, he failed to get into a 15 movie. So he came home, all his mates did, and his mum went, what do you want? And you know, we'll go and get you a little present just to tear you up. And he went, I want a rabbit.
Want to prove your age, isn't it? How old are you, son? Well, I've got a rabbit.
Which is kind of cute when you're 14. But when you are bringing girls back age 21 and you sort of have to break off the kiss from the kissing and then whatever,
you've got old,
to go, I've got to feed me rabbit. I'm terribly sorry. That doesn't really, it's not sexy, is it?
You're right, but you can't just go, well, I'm 20 now, I better shoot it in the face. You can't just do that. It's a
just hurl it over the back fence.
That's it, bye. I've outgrown you.
Simon, what have you done that you've been too old for recently?
Well, I think you said you were 33, right?
33, yeah.
I'm also 33. I don't know.
I'm 35.
You're 35, yeah. So we're all of a similar age.
Wow.
I don't know about you guys, but I sort of feel like this is the age where you do start to feel like a sort of rapid descent into middle age habits takes place, whether it's, you know, not having that extra pint. Well, right now I'm feeling too old to go rock climbing in Bermondsey, which is what I did on Saturday.
Are you feeling it now?
And I'm feeling it now in my arms. They're killing me. I haven't. If anyone presented me with a very difficult to open jam jar right now, I would seriously struggle.
Extreme jam jar opening.
I woke up the other day and my leg just hurt, and I realised it's because I've been asleep and my body now hates me. This is just what happens. I don't even have to exercise anymore. My body's just going, you slept wrong, you're done for the day, mate.
I put my back out yawning not that long ago.
How?
Just a deep yawn.
A deep yawn.
Triggered something.
Oh, wow.
And I yawn a lot because I'm old now.
You've got to be careful about yawning. I was I finished playing hockey on Saturday at Lee Valley, where I play hockey, and which is near Stratford, if anyone knows where the Olympic Park was. And there were some young black guys filming a rap video. And they had like cars, you know, fast cars and motorbikes, and the police had turned up. I don't know if they were part of it. I suspect they probably saw a group of black lads in a car park and thought, we better go and check this out. But they were just filming a rap video, and there was a young woman there wearing not much. And if you were out on Saturday, it was pretty cold.
Very
and
cold,
I thought,
yeah.
I think she's put some clothes on. I think she's going to catch a death. And that is the sort of thing that my dad would say. So we're all turning into our dads, basically.
I think five years from now, you'll actually tell her that.
Yeah, well, I did say, would you like a hockey player in your video? But I don't think it was the vibe. I'm in my full kit, you know. Hello, guys. Would you like a hockey player in your rap video? Your hippity-hoppity video? But they didn't want me, so I drove home. In my BMW, you know. I haven't got a souped-up car, but I did have my hockey kit on. Simon and Tiernan, there's been some other stories quickly in the papers, some of the more serious ones. One that caught my eye was that crisp fans have been scoffing bags that are intended for five people. That is in the Sun. There you go, Tim. Are you a man who scoffs a full bag of Doritos?
Yeah,
to yourself?
Of course. If you're a fan, you're going to go out of your way to do better than other people, aren't you? Like, as a Star Wars fan, I've seen the new Star Wars film probably more than someone who isn't. If you're a crisp fan, you're going to eat more crisps. That's how it works, isn't it? That's what a fan
means. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Simon, you're quite slight. You know, you don't look like a man that eats a full pack of Doritos.
I'm sort of in relatively good shape despite my advancing years, because I ride bikes a lot. But the main reason I do that is so that I can get away with eating a full sharing bag of whatever it is, and not becoming sort of clinically obese, and then having my GP getting paid to treat me. But yeah, this is all about the sharing bag. The sharing bag in heavy inverted commas that, yeah, if people do share, probably don't share terribly widely, whether it's a massive bag of Minstrels or in this case, giant Doritos.
What was particularly surprising, I thought, about this story was the bit that I've circled down the bottom, Tiernan, about people not really realising that these bags, that are shit called sharing bags, aren't they really, are not meant just for one person.
I think it shows how selfish the world has got, Tom. And they look at a sharing bag and go, well, I'll share that between me and me. Terrible.
And there's a statistic at the bottom. It's by Grocer magazine. And it says that...
Is there a Grocer magazine?
Yeah. Very good.
Isn't that amazing?
Do you take it, Simon?
I follow it on Twitter. It's quite good for stories sometimes.
Yeah, they do some good investigations. It's like the witch of the grocery... Well,
yeah,
is it just sort of like, you know, headline apples £3 or what sort of stuff does it?
Well, it does this. It does this sort of thing.
It does on
industry.
Yeah, industry stuff. And it said the grocer fan, as many as 1 in 12, didn't know that it was meant to be intended for 4 or 5 people, and they believe the jumbo packs were simply intended for when they felt hungrier.
Well, I think it's obviously all conspiracy on the part of the food producers, because they don't mark these bags as sharing bags. There's no, like, you know, find 4 people before you open this. They want us to, you know, buy bigger bags at greater expense.
You must find 4 people before you can open this.
You can pretend you're a really tiny person having a normal pack of Doritos. That is exciting.
And also it makes you think, when you do get a normal size bag, you think, bloody hell, this isn't worth bothering with. There's like 5 Doritos.
Well, they put
here.
Less in the smaller bags now as well, haven't they?
Yeah.
Like, if you buy a multi-pack, there's barely any in the small bags.
And the shrinking Mars bars, all of that.
Yeah.
Scam.
Yeah,
total scam.
Right, let's play another song and we'll come back and we'll talk some lighter stories from the papers until Simon then has to depart and leave us and go back to his real job.
I've got to go and buy
real
some cheap food in the EasyJet store.
Oh, tease. We're going to come to that story afterwards. He's teasing us. Stay tuned, because I tell you, if that hasn't sold you to stay tuned, I don't know what will. Too edgy for us. Rapidly heading towards middle-aged men. Tiernan Duib, comedian, and Simon Osborne from The Independent. Yeah. Do you like dubstep? I don't know. Is that dubstep? Do we know?
I prefer subtitles, stepmate.
That is lame. That's lame.
It's lame, isn't it?
The UK Pun Championship, you're much of a punner. Have you thought about entering that one?
No, I haven't. I don't know, I can't take puns seriously. Not that you're meant to, they're jokes. But, you know, I'll throw in a pun here and there.
Yeah, yeah.
I had one recently about... In fact, it's so bad I don't even want to say it on air.
Okay, don't then.
No, I won't, no.
We've had the UK Pun Champion in doing the papers, Leo Kearse. I don't know if you know Leo Kearse.
Oh, yeah, Leo's great. He's superb at them.
Yeah, but he does them all the time. And you really have to be concentrating. And often, I'm sorry, Leo, I'm going to say it, but sometimes they're not funny. And it's hard to be... alone in a room when a man is punning at you and they're not all funny.
It's when they're extremely laboured that you just go, oh, just
some of them are very good.
Up.
Some of them
say
are very
a
good.
Normal
some
sentence.
Are very good. But he is the UK Pun Champion, as though that's a thing. Simon Usborne, you teased us before the last song with a story about cheap food. You're going there later today.
Sorry,
what
yeah,
is
I,
it? I, Where are you going? Let us know.
I suggested that to my editors this morning that I should, after this, head to a location off the North Circular Road at Park Royal West. Where
you get sent to all the best places.
Sir, any tips on the route, gratefully received. Sir Stelios of EasyJet fame has just opened an Easy Food store where everything is 25p.
Mm.
It looks a bit like a cross between a food bank and a Lidl, from what I can tell. And he's doing it with very good intentions. It's something that he wants to expand, something he tried to do in Croydon a couple of years ago but couldn't get the right planning permission.
Right.
But now you can go there and get everything from, you know, pots of noodles to sardines, tinned spaghetti hoops for 25p for the whole of February. I'm not sure what the prices will do after that, whether this is just some sort of launch. But the pictures of it looks incredibly, as you might imagine, sort of orange and Spartan, not unlike an EasyJet plane. But yeah, I'm going to go and stock up on expenses.
They do gyms already, don't they? Easy gyms.
They do an easy
coffee, I think, in London, where coffee's a pound.
Oh, really?
I've never been on an EasyJet flight and thought that sandwich was so delicious. No, don't worry. I've been on far too many, trust me. It's the only benefit of being this height is that they're sometimes bearable. I've never got a sandwich and thought this food is so good, I wish I could get easy food for my home.
No, I suspect they're not going for sort of gourmand market.
No.
Are they going to do...
But I will discuss.
I wonder if they'll do cross... sort of, what do you call it?
Where promotion.
Promotion, where they'll sort of sell a 25p can of Alphabetti spaghetti on the plane.
I wonder if in between every bit of food there's an option to buy a scratch card.
Yeah, almost certainly. I mean, you did say, Simon, that he's got good intentions, Stelios, with this.
Yeah.
How do we know that is actually the case? He's a businessman. I'm not suggesting he hasn't, but he's a businessman. Why is it that we believe that might be the case?
Well, I think apparently because he's got experience in this, in that he has distributed food to poor people in Greece and Cyprus, his neck of the woods.
You mean they are poverty-stricken people? But it's poor them for getting food from him.
So he wants to make that model work here, and it's he's doing it with this other company, which is a brand from a Dutch non-profit. So there is a kind of genuine charity element, but yeah, obviously he's a businessman.
And so
well,
what's so. Your story? Do you think what sort of feature can we expect in the Independent tomorrow? I mean, I would say perhaps get some of the tins and maybe go and get some, some better, not better values, you know, the Sainsbury's Best or whatever it is, and see if anyone can tell the difference.
We could have a taste test in my office of tinned goods.
You know,
from
get a foodie.
We can go.
Who's your foodie? You must have a food critic.
We have several.
Exactly.
Foodies,
Grace Dent.
But we also live
Grace
in our, the building where the Independent is based is above the giant Whole Foods in Kensington. I don't know if you know that. It's probably the poshest supermarket in the country.
Yeah, I worked. So I did some work for the Daily Mail in the office a while ago. I mean, I do work for the Daily Mail. I do some stuff for them, but I actually worked in the office and I spent my entire wages on my lunch.
Yeah, you go and do you get the salad, the weigh and pay salad there?
Yeah, you're like, what?
£12, please, sir, for you.
Yeah.
Bit of tofu or whatever you get in Whole Foods. But yeah, that might be a worthy comparison there.
Do they do sharing bags of crisps?
They do. Well, that's the thing with the, you know, posh food is probably less healthy, I think, than
oh, yeah.
Than
oh, sorry, I meant food. In the easy place.
I mean, the easy place, I don't know. 25p sharing bag of Doritos probably
sounds
be a bargain.
Yeah.
But it's all going to be budget. It's all going to be budget stuff. So, like, Aldi used to do really, it used to be in that way. You know, they're like brands you've never heard of. Is it going to be the same sort of
deal?
I
have no idea where they're sourcing this food from is a good question. But yeah, read it in the Independent tomorrow, all good news agents.
We will do. TNN, there's a great story on page 3 of of the Times. I don't know if you've got that. I particularly enjoy this. I don't usually enjoy stories in the Times, but can you tell us what it is?
Ah, this one.
And maybe do your crap. Maybe do your crap joke.
Oh no! See, now I'm definitely going to
ruin the magic.
Yeah, there's never any magic. There's a boy got a prize for taking a photo of his of taking a selfie with him and his dad, I believe it is. Mm. And in the background is a horse, which is apparently a prize-winning horse, and the owner of the horse now demands that they get some of the boy's prize money.
Yes,
because they're horse in the photo and they didn't ask for the horse's consent.
I mean, that is really mean-spirited.
Isn't it?
It's £2,000 as well, which, I mean, it's in Prestatyn. I'm not denying that £2,000... It's not £2,000, is it? They want a holiday.
Yeah, so they wanted to go on holiday.
It's not like you've got £2,000.
So if that person got a bit of their thing where they have to go on holiday with them, if the horse, they have to go on holiday with this horse owner that they don't know, and possibly a horse.
And also, she's gone about it the wrong way, because, you know, after being so mean-spirited, you're not going to want to go on holiday with this person. You're going to be like, they're a right idiot. They've been a right idiot about this. So there's some great quote in there, isn't there, that she says something like, if I'd have known that this competition was on, I would have done it myself and I would have won the £2,000 holiday because my horse is always sticking out its tongue.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it's not quite the same. I want to know why the horse can stick out its tongue. Like, can you win by a tongue in horse racing? Is there some sort of dodgy scam going on here?
Yes. That's quite a clever idea.
Would be, wouldn't it?
Train up all your... I mean, actually, you know, in races like that, fine margins are... you can smash the mic, but you know, you look at anything that can give you a slight edge, and if that edge is teaching all of your horses to just poke its tongue out right at the end of a race,
there's something there. And then she'd get a lot more than £2,000.
Well,
she can shut up about her holiday.
Simon, there's another story you've done. Is that today that you've done about cheating?
In today's India, is a sort of slightly startling case from the world of cycling.
It's good having someone in here who's actually done something, isn't it?
Yeah. It's really nice.
Cycling, the cheating and cycling sort of sadly go hand in hand, or have done historically, although sport's moved on. But now there's a new threat, and it's known as motor doping or mechanical doping. And for the first time, a rider in an official race has been found with a bike that contains a little motor, totally concealed, a little secret button on the handlebars that, when used, adds some power to your pedalling. They won't do the pedalling for you, but it'll add that crucial bit of power that could be the difference.
Yeah, so it's not like you or I could enter this race just stick that one on there and
you
just go past Lance Armstrong.
No.
I mean, he's not racing anymore, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. But you can,
yeah,
like,
that's the worst example
Chris,
you could have given.
Froome,
it's not like you or I can take a load of, possibly, allegedly take a lot of...
Well, I mean, that is the argument about the banning of substances. I mean, it's not like you or I, again, could take those drugs and we would be beating Bradley Wiggins or Chris Froome. They just make people excellent.
Yeah, you've got to be good. You've got to be good to start with. You couldn't lift your feet off the pedals and let the motor do the work.
No, that would be a proper motorbike, wouldn't it? Which I'd like to see in some cycling competitions, just for the fun. Just, you know, imagine the Tour de France with one guy on a motorbike, one guy on a Yamaha.
Well, you do. You always see them with the cameras on.
Oh, that's true.
And they're always
cheaters.
First. They're always first, aren't they? They're always first. And so, is this? You couldn't get away with this during the Tour de France, could you?
Well, no, because the governing body has been aware of the risk of this because the tech's good enough for it to be possible, and so they have been checking bikes, like scanning them. Chris Froome had his bike checked in the last Tour de France for a motor, among many others. But it's the first time that anyone's actually been stupid enough, although she didn't. She says it was as a result of confusion, this Belgian rider. First time it's actually been spotted.
How is it? So
she said
confused.
It was her friend's bike that somehow made it to
convenient.
The start line.
What, so she's just grassed her mate up for cheating?
Yeah, well, the mate hasn't come out in support of her, said it's all true. It was my bike, Gov.
But, was her mate not a fellow racer?
No.
Oh,
She'd given one of her bikes to the mate previously, so it looked the same as hers.
Are we having that?
It's a professional racer. She's having to borrow her mate's bike.
Has it got a basket on the front? It's got a low frame and got a basket on the front. A little bell. Excuse me, I've got a motor. So you need that when you've got a motor on, just to get people out of the way so you can proceed to win. Simon Osborne, you're going to have to go now, haven't you? Because you've got to go and eat some...
I am. Although in a dramatic twist, I've had a text from the news desk that apparently there's another reporter who might be going in my place.
So
you will read about it tomorrow.
So by coming here, you've missed out on your story.
On my glamorous assignment to the Easy Food Store. But yeah, I will go and find out. But thank you very much.
Pleasure. No, thanks for coming, Simon Usborne. And you're on Twitter. Where can people follow you?
Susborne, Susborne, for what it's worth.
For all those great independent scoops, of which you've been regaling us today. And thank you very much for doing so.
Well, no, thank you very much. Nice to meet you guys.
You too.
Bye. And TNN's still going to stay with me for the rest of the hour, aren't you, mate?
I don't have a choice.
I've changed to the floor. And we're going to be doing all sorts of stuff and chatting all sorts of amusing things, but do stay there because otherwise it's just me in a room, Tien. Right, let's play a song. We'll come back after this. We've only got an hour to go. Oh, where does the time go?
Presents
Payne and Sylvester Incorporated.
When don't we talk about tactical wanks?
I try and get it in maybe 45 minutes before.
You don't want to be flaccid and leaking. Oh. I know.
Maybe instead of Payne and Sylvester, I'll be flaccid. Welcome to the Flaccid and Leaking Show.
Flaccid and Leaking Incorporated.
Who wants to be who?
I think I'd rather be leaking than flaccid.
Someone's going to come in and wipe that stall afterwards.
I'm not leaking.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were leaking.
I'm not leaking. Only thing I'm leaking is information and pleasant family vibes. This is a family show, after all.
Payne
and Sylvester Incorporated. Fun for all the family.
Every Wednesday.
Payne and Sylvester Incorporated.
From 4 p.m. on FUBAR Radio. Tom Latcham on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, welcome back. We're coming to the second and final hour here. I'm alongside Tien and Duab, comedian. He's still here. You are still here, aren't you?
I am still here.
He's still here. We've still got him. We've been asking what are you too old to do in light of Frank Bruno maybe having his ring comeback. We've been asking you to get in touch. Tom at FUBARradio.com or Twitter's at FUBARradio. Daniel Thomas says up till 6 a.m. in a post pub club blowout. I'm 40. It took 3 days to recover, and I took F all from the experience. And it's wow. Mr. Zero says, what was I too... We asked, what are you too old to do? And he says, turned on Radio 1. Absolutely right. It's noise. Stick with us here.
Terrible noise.
It is bad noise, isn't it? Stick with us here on FUBAR Radio now. As I say, Simon Osborne's gone, but thank you for that from The Independent. He was great. Valentine's Day is around the corner, and for men and women, although mostly men, admittedly, the panic for the perfect present is a yearly occurrence. But never fear, we found the perfect solution. A potato. That's right. This year, you can send your loved one a heartfelt message on a potato from the guys at Mystery Potato. Oh, one sec. Ah, I've got, that's embarrassing. We've got the wrong bloke lined up. It's producers. Producer Will has informed me we've got another story now. Anyhow, sorry about that. We've basically, there's a bloke on the line called Steve Berry. Now, he found some Yeti prints while trekking in the Himalayas. He reckons they could come from Mitchell's, and he joins us on the line. Steve, are you there? You are there, aren't you?
I am here, yeah.
Right, sorry, we could have got the wrong one. That's horribly embarrassing, but
it's abominable.
And Tien has just rescued it for us. Hello, mate. How you doing?
I'm fine. It sounds a lot of fun what you're doing on the radio.
Fun is one word for it. But you've so you reckon you found the Yeti prints, right? Is that have you?
Yeah. I'm completely convinced now. I was a skeptic like everybody else until I found these tracks.
Really?
I mean, I've always thought that there was something there, and I thought that it was probably some sort of rare bear or something like that. But these tracks were on a sloping snow ledge on a side of a very steep mountain, and it went across the slope of the mountain with one foot exactly in front of the other, big prints. And I just don't think that a snow leopard or a bear could make those prints because they're so perfectly one in front of the other. Have you seen the pictures?
I can see the pictures, yeah. I've got them here. Although, it could be someone hopping.
Yeah. I mean, could be the giant Himalayan bunny rabbit.
Exactly. I mean,
legendary appearance.
Well, Steve, you can't rule anything out at this point, at this juncture. It could be someone like yourself. Thought, you know what? I'm gonna take the piss here. I'm gonna do a little hop across the Himalayas, and then Steve Berry is gonna come up, and he's gonna believe it's a Yeti.
It could have been, I don't know, something on a pogo stick, but with a big
Yeti on a pogo stick.
That would be incredible.
So, Steve,
brilliant.
So, Steve, what were you doing up there?
Well, in 1986, I got a permission to try and climb the mountain, Gangapunsum, which is the highest unclimbed mountain in the world now, from which you will gather that we didn't get to the top. But we did get very high on the mountain, and we were just forced off by the most horrendous weather. Luckily, we all came back alive. But I mean, I've always had a really special relationship with the mountain. I've been back four or five times now, and I've always wanted to see the other side of the mountain. So in 2014, I got a permit to go to the other side of the mountain, and it was when we were up there exploring. And I tell you, it is absolutely fantastic up there. And hardly any Westerners have ever been up in that area. And the local people told us that where we'd got to, this big high col at 17,800 feet, there had been no humans, either Bhutanese or Europeans, had ever been up there before.
Wow.
And when we got onto the col, after a very long day, we just got onto the col, put the sacks down, and the guide said, "Hey, look at that, Mr. Berry-La. There's some strange tracks over there. And over on our left, on this steep mountainside, you could see these incredible tracks."
And so, Yeti, or Migo, as it's known in Bhutan.
Migu.
Migu, it's known in Bhutan. A yak herder told you he'd seen this Yeti 11 years ago. What is a Yeti?
What is a Yeti?
Yeah.
Or a Migu?
Either of them. I mean, what are they? Because obviously they're not meant to exist. I mean, what actually are they?
Well, I mean, the problem that we have here is that, you know, the media, God bless their cotton socks, have...
You're the only person that's ever said that, by the way.
Have hyped it up to think that, you know, to make us all believe that it's a cross between Neanderthal man and humankind, you know, that we humans were at some point in our dim distant future bonking Neanderthals, and that
well, I've done it. I don't know about you, Steve. Desperate times, desperate measures.
So, you know, I mean, we were probably even more desperate several tens of thousands of years
ago. I don't know, mate. You don't know me.
And there we are. This was the result. But I don't believe that. Right. I think it's some kind of strange, rare mountain gorilla type. You know, it's an ape of some sort.
Mm. Right.
Because it, you know, you look at those tracks. It has to be a large creature standing upright.
Mm.
It couldn't be something on four legs. Though you couldn't. Four-legged creature could not make those tracks.
Well, I mean, that's what experts, inverted commas, of course, they've said. They're sceptical about the tracks and believe they could belong to a goat.
Yeah, I mean, oh, my God. Honestly, the track of a goat is tiny. Mm. I mean, yes, there are lots of blue sheep and, you know, various kinds of deer that exist up there, mountain goats. But, you know, they're tiny tracks. They're tiny, tiny tracks.
Mm.
These are large tracks. Big prints.
And, Steve, will you be going back up there again to try and locate said Yeti?
My mind is set on it, yeah.
Do you think you're going to find the Yeti?
Well, I've got, you know, I think I know where it is, you know, up there.
It's got a house.
Because I went again.
It's got Sky TV.
Yeah.
It's just knocking about.
It's got its own private valley. It's got its own private valley with two nice lakes in the bottom of it, cut off by mountains on three sides, cut off by the glacier on the fourth side. And I think it's got its own private little place up there.
Oh, sounds lovely. Does he do Airbnb?
Well, Steve, we wish you all the best. When are you going back up there next?
Well, I'm hoping to take a group, you know, through my company, Mountain Kingdoms, down here in Witten-under-Edge. I hope that I'll take a group up there this autumn. Mm. I went back again in 2015, by the way, last year, and saw another set of tracks about 2 or 3 kilometres away from the tracks I saw in 2014. Again, very, very interesting tracks, one in front of the other. I don't know whether you've seen those pictures.
No,
I think the Daily Express had them yesterday.
That's why no one's read them. I'm only joking. Daily Express, fantastic paper. It's not your job, is it, being a trekker? That's surely not a job.
It is, it's a job. I've been doing it for 30 years.
How do you make money out of being a trekker?
Yeah, I do trekking holidays all over the world, all over the globe, but a lot in the Himalaya.
Maybe you can take us.
Yeah,
Sienna, are you up for it?
You can't really criticise anyone else's job, Tom. Look at what we do. Trekking is actually
no, that is a real thing. Yeah, we should go, Sienna. You up for that?
Yeah, I'm very up for that.
Well, we're gonna come with you, Steve.
You want to come then?
We're gonna come with you, Steve. Steve, I tell you what though, please do come on the show again. It's fascinating, really interesting, and I'm sorry I introed you with a story about potatoes with things written on because this is fascinating. So thank you very much, Steve. Thank you for joining us. And, yeah, do come on again.
Yeah, and if there anybody interested, Mountain Kingdoms down in Witten-under-Edge.
There you go. Have you got of course I don't. Do it again. Have you got a website?
Yeah, www.mountainkingdoms.com.
There you go. Fantastic stuff. Steve Berry, thanks very much, mate.
Okay.
All the best. See you, mate.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.
That was Steve Berry, who's found, he says, Yeti tracks. Not potatoes with things written on them. Yeah.
I mean,
right, anyway, we'll play a song. We're going to come back with more after this. We'll play a bit of Ian Brown. It's Stellify, and Sienna Durr's going to stick with us.
Fall. falling from the sky.
Bar Radio. It's 11:17. I'm with Tien and Dueb, the comedian. After that last bit where we didn't do the potato thing, we are now going to do it. Unfortunately, the Mystery Potato, Jeff from Mystery Potato, won't have a clue what I'm talking about, but he's on the line. I'll have to say hello to him now. Hello, Jeff. How you doing?
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
I'm good, thanks. You're over in America, aren't you, Jeff? So there might be a slight delay on the line. What you won't know is that I introduced you in the previous section, and it was a different guest. So we finally do have you.
Awesome.
Yes, quite. Well, this is live radio. It's where things sometimes go wrong. But, Jeff, you work for Mystery Potato, and as I said earlier... Valentine's Day is on the way, and most people panic, but we've got an idea, the perfect solution for Valentine's Day, and you're here to tell us what it is. It's a potato, but what's romantic about it, Jeff?
Oh man, potatoes are awesome. Potatoes come in red, potatoes come in brown. You can put love messages on potatoes. You can put hater messages on your potatoes. We call those hater taters. And we keep them. We can keep them anonymous. We can put your name on them. You can cause whatever kind of chaos and confusion you want with a potato. It's pretty amazing.
But I mean, you can do that with anything.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Why potatoes in particular? I mean, why did you think? Well, you know what the world is crying out for here? It is a potato that you can write on and put messages on.
Well, you know, it's real simple. When was the last time you received a potato in the mail? Probably not very often.
Tienan, have you ever received a potato in the mail?
Only as a threat. No, I haven't.
So if you haven't received a potato, that means you're missing out, right? You need to get with your buds, and you need to get them to send you some spuds.
This is true. Although spuds in the UK have a very different meaning, so I don't want any.
I don't want anyone spuds in particular. Yeah.
How did you come up with this, and when?
Oh, so we actually bought the business from a gentleman who started it. He'd had it for about a month, and he decided after doing about 20 potatoes that he didn't want to have potatoes all over his house anymore. And so my business partner and I, when
was
we thought
it
for sale,
watching,
man, let me
time.
Tell you, we knew it was for us. It is awesome, and it is weird, and it's quirky, and we knew it was going to fit us really well.
And so is there much call for personalized messages on potatoes? I mean, you said the guy had done 20 before you bought it. That in a month. Have you upped that?
Well, that was in a month, and just to give you some perspective, since Friday, we've had a lot of press this weekend, since Friday, we've done over 850 orders.
Wow. Four single spuds or sometimes multiple?
Every now and then we'll send a multiple. We also do glitter bombs, and if you really want, like, you know, it's actually more popular with the ex-boyfriend, ex-girlfriend crowd, we will send an entire box of potato with your message. You know, it's really popular with the you suck crowd or the shove it crowd. We will send the whole box.
You're saying trolling with potatoes, basically, is what you're saying.
You bet, man. You bet.
What's the best type of potato to troll someone with? Is there a particular type of potato?
You know, I'm a really big fan of just a straight-up russet potato. A nice big one, because we can write really big and bold on it. And you know, there's nothing that competes with that when it shows up and you get this thing and you open it and you're just like, WTF. Right?
Jeff, you're such a conservative. What about the sweet potato?
I prefer to eat sweet potatoes myself. I'm a fan of the sweetness. And we send them. We definitely send them. But man, the rest is where it is.
What is the? Because I there was a story in the British media a little while ago where you can get your word posted on a Nutella jar, and some of the and you could try and get naughty ones through. But basically, there is some sort of check system in place, and people were getting something like bum gravy or something like that.
Yeah.
And they got through, but there were other ones where they said no, they won't get through, and they had to pretend that it was like their mate's name or something, or their nickname. What's the sort of rudest message you've ever put on there? And you can say it, because we're Food World Radio, we're uncensored here. And do you put? Will you literally put anything on there?
We will not literally put anything on there. We don't want to harass. We don't want to take it to the next level of harassment. But we've put things. We've put plenty of things on potatoes that I do not understand. I don't have one sitting right here in front of me. But we get some from people who were clearly drunk when they filled out that order form.
Right? Drunk people ordering potatoes. What is the word?
I had a guy who had five potatoes on one order, and they all said exactly the same thing, and it was like 25 words, and I emailed the guy, and they're all going to the exact same place. I emailed the guy, I'm like, hey, what's up? You really want to send five potatoes with like 50 words on every potato? And he goes, oh, man, I was so drunk last night.
So historically people would go to strippers or hookers, but now people are just getting messages on potatoes. Weird.
And now they're doing it with potatoes. I don't know, things have changed, but I'm here for y'all.
And how much does it cost to get a potato with a message on?
So it's in the US it's about $10, you know, it'd be like £7. And then it depends on where you want to ship it, international or local, that kind of thing. So we add on the shipping, we do pass that on to you, but $10 for a russet potato, it's cheaper if you want to get a little one or if you want to get a red one, that kind of thing. The box, if you want to take it to the next level with a box of potatoes, it is a little more.
Do you do sexy ones?
Oh, yeah, you bet. We send a lot of them this time of year. The most popular message we do is you're a hot potato.
That's not sexy.
can you tell I need some more interesting customers, right?
I've got
eyes for
you.
I need you all to get out there and add some variety here.
Insert this here. I don't know, something like that.
Take off my jacket.
Oh, very good. Take off your jacket.
you can play with the word eyes. You can play with the word starch. You know, it's, you know, we need to starch something up. You can play with tater. We send a lot of haters going to hate. Potatoes going to potate. You know, we get some interest here.
Lick my spuds.
Sure. I like where you're going now.
Can I? Well, do you ship to the UK? Because I'll have one of them for my girlfriend.
We do ship to the UK.
Okay, you one lick my right spuds, please. Dear Sophie, lick my spuds.
Okay, stick it in there, man.
I will do. Jeff, thanks for joining us, mate.
Thanks, you guys.
Where can people go to personalize their spuds?
So you go to mysterypotato.com. You can find us on Twitter, My Mystery Potato, Instagram, or wherever you are. So just check us out.
There you go. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Bye.
All the best. That was Jeff from Mr. Potato, who got up in the middle of the night in America to do that, which is, you know,
that's
fantastic.
Amazing.
Well done him, and I hope Valentine's night he fills his boots with potato messages for God. If your girlfriend received a potato on Valentine's Day, what do you think her reaction would be?
Well, she likes a baked potato. I think probably not with a message on it. I don't think she'd notice. Probably just have it for tea. Why would you? What's stopping me just going to the supermarket, writing a load of rude words on potatoes?
Well, in a way. Oh, maybe we should.
Maybe we should.
In a way, they. I've seen the pictures of them, and they do sort of look a bit like they've been written on by a black marker.
Yeah, it does a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. So maybe we could just do that, but I think maybe they are. I think that might be. Is Jeff just writing just messages writing on with a little black marker in America?
In which case, the man is a genius.
Sticking him in the post. They are. They're basically just.
And if you're doing overseas shipping, by the time the potato gets to you, it's going to be in a terrible state.
Yeah,
it
will have sprouted and all sorts.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to play a song and we'll come back and talk a bit more with Tien and Dueb and other random weird stuff later on. This is the Doves with Black and White Sound. This is weird.
Radio presents Don Brown
and Hugh Joseph. We've got a very, very good friend of the show, our main man, Pete from Pimlico. Hello, mate.
That's right, Australia Day, isn't it? Australia. It produced Rolf Harris, who was a cock. It's also got a big, massive hard rock. Australians, any successful ones flee, like Kylie, Hugh Josephine. I ain't never been there because it's too far. And anyway, there's loads of them serving in me local bar.
Doc Brown.
To be honest, backing track is kind of irrelevant.
With the Coolio Bambaa. The backing track don't really matter, innit?
No, like poetry.
Every Tuesday. Don Brown and Hugh Joseph. From 4 p.m. on FUBAR Radio.
That's coming up later. But before then, it's me, Tom Latcham, and Tien and Dueb, my co-presenter for the day. And it's 11:30. We're coming to the last half an hour of the show. And what doesn't time fly when you're talking to weird people about potatoes? Tien and there's we're trying to look at the weird and wonderful news in the world, and there's been a story in Greece which I think is frankly remarkable. I don't know about you. Maybe you can explain to people
listening. It is remarkable.
What it is I'm talking about.
Well, this story is that a second-tier league match in Greece, a football match, was completely delayed when all the players and the coaches and the substitutes decided to sit in silence for 2 minutes on the pitch in respect to all the refugees travelling from Syria and Iraq.
Mm.
That's amazing. Mm. Can you imagine that happening here?
No.
No, exactly.
And that's why it's so amazing. I mean, just the sort of shower of arseholes that play football in the United Kingdom.
Is that the collective term?
Yeah.
Cameron said, bunch of maggots, you're a shower of arseholes for football. Is that it? Right,
yeah,
okay.
I think it'll probably cause slightly less uproar.
I think so, yeah.
Because it's true. But you can't imagine that they wouldn't sit down, you know, that they've got the moral fibre nor the world awareness even.
I also have a feeling that if it happened on one of the TV channels, they'd just switch over to an advert for 2 minutes, wouldn't they?
That's very true. That's what you're so cynical, aren't you, Tiana? But I mean, you know, I wonder what would British football players protest about? That they've shut the local strip club in their in their town or something.
Yeah, that's a hard one, isn't it? Like they've lowered the speed limit on the roads nearby.
They've outlawed gigantic 4x4s.
Yeah.
And they're not allowed anymore. And that's the sort of thing. Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable. And whether it will have any, whether this protest in Greece will have any impact whatsoever in terms of it changing policy is another matter. Mm. But what a statement. And it's gone all around the world.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. And also, what a good thing to kind of protest about as well. A nice thing to kind of raise awareness about that people are travelling. Because I feel I've got a thing here where I feel we've got quite a lot of anti-refugee sentiment here in the UK.
We certainly do.
The thing that I always find annoying is when people go, why do they have to come here? As though if there was a war here, they'd just stand still and wait to die so not to bother anyone. You know, it's so bizarre.
And I want, and as well, you know, talking about the UK and why it probably wouldn't happen is that your average football fan probably not all that sympathetic to the refugees.
No.
And so I don't know. So there was applause when these guys sat down from the crowd. It wasn't a huge
that
crowd, I'll be honest.
That ruins the silence.
No, it wasn't a silence. It was just a sitting.
Oh, okay.
It was a sitting. There was applause for them. There was silence, but there was applause from people in the stands. Albeit it wasn't a massive crowd because it was a League Two fixture in Greece. But I don't imagine they'd get the same support from football fans.
It'd be
UK.
A new chant that would get created fairly quickly, I'd have thought.
Right. And over closer to home, there's a story that's been... we've talked a lot about airlines today, but there's a particularly enjoyable story that was in the papers recently about Ryanair. Wasn't there, Sienna?
Yeah, so this man who's got a brilliant name, Lucas Marshall. That is a good name, is it?
That feels
like some sort of Texas sheriff name.
Or Star Wars.
Yeah, some sort of, yeah, it's Lucas Marshall taking on the evil empire of Ryanair.
Yeah.
And so he's won a court battle against Ryanair.
Mm.
What was it? He paid a fee. He paid a fee to, because he couldn't print off his boarding
Which
passes.
Which is bonkers, by the way, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, like, it's
£320 they wanted off him for printing out 5 or 6 boarding passes.
Which is crazy. I mean, because that doesn't cost... I don't know what their printer ink cartridges cost. I mean, HP ones are quite expensive, but it's not that much, is it?
No, it's not. So he tried to get his money back, took him to court. They did lose because they didn't really turn up, basically.
Yeah, they didn't respond, did they?
And then they obviously didn't respond by sending him any money either in the post. So what did he do next?
Yeah, sent in bailiffs.
Excellent.
To go and collect the money, which is brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
I really hope they came round every sort of 10 minutes after an annoying announcement. That would be perfect.
And he's got the cheque framed in his front room. I don't know if that means that he hasn't claimed the money.
Yeah, I think that's the problem with it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although some banks now, you can take a photo and send in your cheque.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, so you can.
So maybe he's slyly done that. Yeah, I would definitely cash that in straight away.
Now, we've got someone else joining us on the line. Most dog owners will at some time or other have wanted to know what their dog's saying when it barks.
Obviously.
Yeah. Have you got a dog, Tiernan?
No, I haven't. No, but if I did,
you'd want to know what
I'd
it was saying.
I'd want to know what it was going on about.
Now, one company claims a smart collar and app they're designing could make this a reality. The conceptual design for such a system has been unveiled by online pet store Fetch.co.uk, which recently launched the UK's first pet technology centre, and it's playfully named this What's Yap. Do you get it? What's Yap? Yeah. Arf, arf. Anyhow, because it's a messaging app that bears some resemblance to WhatsApp, but for dogs. How will it work? Hopefully, Rachel Comerford, head of commercial at Fetch, can tell us. She joins us on the line. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, good morning.
Morning, how are you doing?
Yeah, really well, thank you.
Good stuff. So, you guys at Fetch said that WhatsApp is designed to be the world's most advanced communication system between dog and owners. But what exactly is it going to do?
You know what, that is a really good question. So the finished product is going to analyse a dog's bark, any other movements that it makes, and it all does this through a smart device that attaches to its existing collar, and then it translates them into words such as, you know, there's someone at the door, or, do you know what, I really want to go for a walk. I mean, how cool would that be if you could actually understand what your dog is trying to say to you?
Would it get annoying after a while, though? Like, just food, 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 shut up! You know? With those very, like, yappy dogs, that would drive you bonkers.
No, I think knowing what they want is a lot easier than trying to guess at what they want.
Also, dogs are smart, right? So if it knew that by barking it was going to get some food, it would then just bark a lot in the way that it said it wanted some food, because it know that you're going to get a text message saying that the dog wants food.
Do you know what? I'm sure there are some super smart dogs out there that will definitely learn to play the system.
Can dogs message each other on it? Like, will there be sexting and stuff?
No, it is very much between the owner and that individual dog.
Let's just hope there's not been any awkward relationship moments between the dogs and the owners. So how and why did you guys at Fetch come up with this idea? And how likely is it that it's actually going to come to fruition?
Well, you know, we are super passionate about pets. We've all got our own pets. And kind of what started off as a few off-the-wall ideas flying around the office has actually turned into a serious place for pet innovation. And the whole point of this concept is to kind of enhance the relationship that we as pet owners have with our, you know, what people see as their four-legged members of the family. You know, I know that I would love to understand exactly what my King Charles is trying to say to me when he barks at me at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Would it be stop reading my messages?
And so, go on, sorry, carry on. Go on, Rachel.
You also asked kind of the likelihood of this actually coming into play. You know, we're working with a great team of technical engineers who are basically going to turn our idea into a working prototype. You know, we've got the pet knowledge, but they have definitely got the tech knowledge. That's not my expertise.
But hopefully they've briefed you on this. So, I mean, it's not clear how it will translate a dog's language into English. Do you have any idea about how that will work, or is that too techie? Is it too techie and boring even for us?
Yeah, it's too techie. It's basically a learning application, so it will learn the more that you use it. But I think what we should really do is just leave that to the techie guys to figure out.
Have there been any trials? Like, do you know what dogs are saying at the moment? What's the in thing? What are dogs talking? I mean, like, have there been any sort of early trials of this? I just wondered what dogs were saying.
No, unfortunately not. At the moment, it's still very much a concept stage. But, I mean, who knows what they talk about? I've got no idea.
Sausages.
That's why I'd like to know.
Tiernan Dewar, who's that? The other voice that you're hearing there, he does a political podcast. He probably wants to know what dogs are thinking about Jeremy Corbyn.
Well, one day, if this is a winning vote, then we shall find out what they're saying about Jeremy Corbyn.
And of course, people can vote. What are they voting for, and where can people vote?
So what we're doing at the moment is we are asking the public to go to our page on fetch.co.uk/petnology, where they can vote for one of three kind of shortlisted concepts. They've got one more week to go, so if you want to vote, vote now. And we will announce the winning concept at the end of February.
Any thoughts that you might be able to do the same thing for babies? I mean, we're talking about potentially starting a family at the moment. I know that they're particularly difficult to understand, babies. They cry all the time, but you never quite know. Perhaps that might be more useful.
It's a great idea, and I'm sure, something that people really do want to try and understand. At the moment, you know, we are focusing on Petnology, which is part of our retail business, Fetch. But who knows what the future holds? Watch this space.
We'll pass it on, and I'll have 25%. How does that sound?
I'll let you know.
Okay, that sounds like a no. Thank you very much. Rachel Comerford there, head of commercial at fetch.co.uk. Tiernan, are we having this?
I think they're barking up the wrong tree.
Hey! That's enough of you. Right, it's Fubar Radio, it's 11:40. We'll be back after this. I'm not sure.
FUBAR Radio.
Coming into the last 15 minutes of the show here with me, Tom Latcham. It's 11:45 on FUBAR Radio with my co-presenter Tiana Dewar. He probably isn't going to say very much in this section because it's about rugby and he doesn't really know anything about it. Now the six, no, you know, nothing. What are you good for, Tiana?
I like that they try.
Right.
That is all I've got.
Well, if that's all you've got,
I'm going to go now.
The Six Nations kicks off this weekend with France playing Italy and Scotland hosting England on Saturday before Wales travel to Ireland on Sunday. Now, Yestyn Harris played 25 times for the Welsh Rugby Union side between 2001 and 2004, and he joins us on the phone now to discuss it. Hello, Yestyn, how are you?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, good. Yourself?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for joining us. Now, obviously, turning your expert eye to this, how do you see the weekend's fixtures panning out?
Well, I think everybody's eye is going to be on the England-Scotland game, isn't it? Mm. I think we're all looking to see, obviously, England with a new coach, new captain. You know, how are they going to play? Are they going to look to change the style of play that they played from the World Cup? So I think that's really the really interesting fixture of the weekend. But, you know, Wales have got a tough trip to Ireland as well, so it's a great start to the weekend of the Six Nations.
How do you see England getting on? I mean, obviously, as you say, they've changed their coach, they've changed their captain. Do you think that'll make a big difference?
I do, and I think it's really interesting because I think we'll start to see the way that Eddie Jones wants to play this weekend. I think, will he go with George Ford or Owen Farrell? You know, George Ford's a great runner of the ball. Owen Farrell is very tactical. I think he is going to try and really play a physical platform of a game. He's going to go with a strong pack of forwards. He's going to try and get on the front foot. And I believe he's going to try and play a little bit more of a tactical way than the fast-flowing game that he perhaps played with Japan in the World Cup. So it's going to be very, very interesting. And they've got a tough start. I don't see them winning the competition, you know, but I see them performing very, very well in it.
Do you think that getting rid of Stuart Lancaster after the disastrous World Cup was a complete must?
Well, professional sport is crazy, isn't it? Because the first game of the World Cup was England versus Wales, and I think if England had won that game, then Wales wouldn't have Warren Gatland anymore. Wales win it, and Stuart Lancaster wasn't there. So you are completely judged on results as a coach. And you know, I think when England fail, with it being at home and the competition being in England, you know, with them not succeeding in that, then, you know, it was obviously always going to happen. And I think with Eddie Jones doing so well with Japan, I think they saw it as a natural fit. And, you know, we'll see whether that's successful, but certainly all the signs early on are that, you know, this could be a good time for England.
Well, you've coached as well, of course, Yestyn, so you know a thing or two about coaching. What have you made of the appointment of Eddie Jones? Is he the man that you think will turn around England's fortunes?
Well, I think they have gone for out-and-out experience, haven't they? I think when there's been an underachievement in an international game, and certainly with a high-profile job like England, when that underachievement has happened, what you've got to do is got to try and go for experience as quickly as possible. And Eddie Jones has certainly got that. He's got a wealth of experience. He's coached a lot of international teams. And, you know, I think he'll bring stability to England. And I think that's what they need. I think they need a period of stability with 3 years to go to a World Cup. You're in the next cycle now, and they need that stability to have a real good chance of having a successful World Cup next time around. And yeah, I think it'll be a good appointment. You know, it's obviously controversial with not going with an Englishman, but I feel as though it'll bring that stability to a team that's craving it at this moment in time.
He's also made Dylan Hartley captain, as you mentioned. Now, Dylan Hartley, for anyone who doesn't know, has got a history of on-field misdemeanours. He's been banned for 54 weeks, I think, during his career, which seems like an awful lot. He's not that old. What do you make about that decision to make Dylan Hartley captain?
Well, I'm not sure. I think ultimately what your captain's got to be is essentially bulletproof for you. He's got to be one of the first picks on the team sheet. Is Dylan Hartley that? I'm not sure he is. And, you know, can you guarantee that Dylan Hartley's going to go out and perform superbly well in the full Six Nations? Again, I don't think that's a guarantee. And I think when you've got that with your captain, there's always going to be potential problems ahead. It may work out very, very well, but you said there's always the misdemeanours with Dylan Hartley that's followed him through the career. Mm. So, again, probably Eddie Jones has been an appointment that raised some eyebrows. I think Dylan Hartley is as well, so you know we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Do you think that I mean, he's been banned for gouging, I think, a couple of times. Do you think that people are going to deliberately target Dylan Hartley and wind him up in that way, try to make him react and maybe, you know, gouge or that sort of thing? I mean, and is that what you'd be doing as a player? Would you be telling your players to do that if you were the coach?
Well, totally. I think your captain, if your captain's solid and controlled, then ultimately your team is controlled. And you know, if he reacts, and he has got that reactive streak in him, we all know that. And if he does react and you get underneath his skin, then you're going to get underneath the skin of the whole team. So, you know, as I said, I do think it is a controversial decision to make Dylan Hartley captain. Now, you know, the proof is always in the pudding. And I think this first Six Nations, in my opinion, is a little bit like a honeymoon period, isn't it, for Eddie Jones? He gets this Six Nations, I think, as a chance to see how he works, how he picks the team, how his team develops. And I do think if he was going to make a controversial captain choice, I think now is the right time to do it with the Six Nations. If he's successful, he's a genius. If it doesn't quite work, I think he gets a little bit of a respite with it because it's the honeymoon period.
Do you think that Hartley will be able to keep us cool, given he's been banned so many times?
Well, yeah, I think the question that you asked me before that is right. Is will he get targeted? And ultimately, I think he will. There's some smart coaches in the international teams, and I think he will get targeted. So will he keep his cool? I don't think anybody can answer that. You know, I think what you want to be able to do, as any pundit talking, is to say that a captain will always keep his cool. And that's why I think it's a controversial choice.
And finally, you said that you don't think England are going to win the tournament. Who do you see winning the Six Nations? And well, then you probably shouldn't just say Wales because you're Welsh.
No. I'd love it to be Wales. I just think Ireland are looking very, very strong. I think, you know, Johnny Sexton is by far the most talented number 10 out there who can control a game. When they get in front, they know how to win games. And for me, I just think, I don't think they'll have a Grand Slam. I think there's too many good teams out there for somebody to go through unbeaten, but I just feel as though Ireland are the team that are going to top the pile.
Thank you very much. That's great to talk to you, Yestin. Thank you very much, matey.
Thank you. All the best.
All the best. That's Yestin Harris, Wales rugby legend, who says that England captain might get targeted. I didn't do that. But Tiernan, you don't play rugby. You don't like rugby. But have you ever gouged anyone's eyes? Gouged anyone's eyes?
Ever gouged anyone's eyes? That's a regular Saturday for me, mate.
Exactly. Well, yeah. You are from North London.
It's the Finsbury Park way, mate.
Finally, before we go, there's a story about Google, and this ties into your podcast. Tell us a bit about this story. A man, incredibly, ended up buying Google.com.
This is amazing.
For $12.
Yeah, it's moments like this when I wish I was more tech savvy, right? Yeah. I mean, admittedly, he used to work for Google, so he had some idea about how to do this. But he worked out that the domain name Google.com became available, and he bought it for $12, which is incredible, isn't it?
I'd love to do that. What would you stick on there? Like, I can literally put anything on this website now, and there will be billions of people today going on to this website, and like maybe potatoes with writing on.
Yeah, who would do that to him? It'd be really hard not to just put a big picture of yourself, like, swearing or something. You know, like, just some sort of some sort of statement.
Just writing Google and one of the O's is your bum.
Yeah. Search this.
No one wants to see that.
Oh, that's depressing. Go on, yeah.
Google's got X-rated all of a sudden. That's weird. But, yeah, basically, so it transpired, so they got it back off him. I think he went to them, didn't he, and said, oh, by the way.
Yeah, he let them know because it was a security breach.
You should probably sort this out. And so they gave him $6,006.13, which, if you look at it, sort of looks a bit like Google.
It looks a bit more like they've not given him very much money for potentially ruining their entire business.
But he's donated it to charity, which is very nice.
That's nice. And then they doubled it, apparently.
They doubled it, yeah. So now it doesn't look like Google.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but your podcast, you've been talking a bit about Google this week because of the tax.
Yeah, it's just one of the several stories this week, but I just tried to talk about whether or not it's right. Quite a few people have asked me that, of, you know, if they don't have to pay the tax, should they?
Yeah.
And I think, well, they don't have to, but, you know, it'd be nice if they looked up the word morality on their own search engine.
Yeah,
yeah, so it's just one of the things I'm trying to, basically, as you've probably discovered this hour, I like politics. I don't fully understand it all.
Right.
So I've created a podcast where I'm going to try and do it every week. I look at political stuff and explain it how I understand it.
Mm.
And each week I speak to somebody who's working in one of the fields to do with the issues. So we've had a junior doctor, a professor of economics, talking to us about all the world stocks diving. And this week I've spoken to someone from a disability campaign against cuts, all about the bedroom tax decision last
Very
week.
Good. And what's it called? And where can people find it?
It's called The Partly Political Broadcast. And you can find it on my website, which means you've got to spell my name. That's tiernanduyeb.com.
That's a big problem for you, isn't it?
Yeah. So, but it's easier to find on iTunes, although for some reason the podcast app on iPhones is rubbish, so always wait about a day once I say it's out before it works on that. But yeah, find it on iTunes.
And as we know, a day is a long time in politics.
A very long time, so. Exactly. Everything becomes, that's the problem with doing this, my own problem with doing this podcast. So I do it, and then in about 2 days, it's irrelevant.
Don't say that on it. I'm sure it's highly relevant at all times.
Yeah, no. To be fair, everything always comes back, doesn't it? So it's quite nice. They did the junior doctor one 3 weeks ago, and then yesterday was a big thing about Jeremy Hunt again. You guys say
25,000 going off next week, they say.
Yeah.
Right, well, that's it. We've come to the end of the show. Thanks for all your texts and emails. Finally, we've been asking what you've done recently where you thought, I'm just too old for this. Sean from Bournemouth says, I went to town on the Saturday night. Yeah, know that feeling, mate. And Chris says, went trampolining, nearly threw my back out. And like,
wow.
A bit like Simon Osborne, who threw his back out yawning. Anyway, but thanks to all my guests today, and thanks to you for all your messages. Tiernanduyeb, thank you very much, and people can follow you on Twitter.
Yep, at Tiernanduyeb.
Again, you've got to spell his name.
Just throw letters into Google.
How do you spell Tiernanduyeb?
Yeah, it often corrects you.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a clever thing,
it's
isn't it?
Me.
It's a clever thing. Right, thank you very much, and I'm not around for the next few weeks because I'm going off on my holidays.
Hashtag humble brag.
Humble brag. Well, you know, just got to let people know, haven't you? But coming up at 1 p.m. is a brand new show, as you've heard earlier, FUBAR Radio, Harriet Rose. You can download all my interviews as a podcast from iTunes and SoundCloud as ever. Tom Latcham interviews. I won't be back next week. I'll be back in a few weeks. But we'll have more of the same, hopefully getting things in the right order and not introducing the wrong stuff at the wrong times. But can't promise, and that's why you listen to the show, I'm sure. Anyway, it's FUBAR Radio. We'll play you out with the Beat Nuts. It's Props Over Here. Thanks, TNM. Introducing the crew. Hey, you ain't really you, and you ain't really down. Plus, I'm tired of seeing your fucking phony face around. Cause when I sit back and think back of how you flam me, it make me react. You be at my fucking jammy. Now I don't cop, though my mind's in the sewer. I just kick back with six packs and then I do her. But she gets stuck on, clawing like a cat, cause the toes got sucked on. She don't know how to act. Back in the days, I got 237. Used to run with Kevin, bagging hoes was like heaven. 11 years later, I try to hide and hope they pass me by like I'm the far side. Just let me puff and lounge with my niggas. Don't have no time to fake funk with triggers. Don't believe in kids with that pussycat scent. Fuck around with fashion, get your whole shit bent. Spent crazy years with the blues, paying dues. Before I met the psychos and the junkyard Jews. But now the crew combined and we can't be stopped. Going around the globe to collect our props. When I'm in New York, you know what I wanna hear. Yeah, you get props over here. Come on, out in Cali, you know what I wanna hear. Yeah, you get props over here. When I'm down in Detroit, you know what I wanna hear. Yeah, you get props over here. And when I'm out in Philly, you know what I wanna hear. Yeah, you get props over here. I get stoned every day, I got nothing else to do. I'm getting drunk with my niggas till the night is broke. And when the night is broke, I won't have a fucking clue of what tomorrow brings. So I'll maintain. Excuse me for my language, but I'm trying to get my land stitched together and build a crib for me and my damn bitch.
so never had it like I deserve to have it. I whip it, I stab it, I grip it, I grab it, you silly habit. I'm coming at you pure. Tracks, bomb, the stacks, video, and brochure. I'm sure, unlike others, wanna pop, use a piss drop. Talking that shit, you need to stop. Cause when I approach and you can't back up what you said, Foma, fly, you fucking head
now
like that.
Now when I'm in Atlanta, you know what I wanna hear.
Yeah, you get props over here.
Texas, you know what I wanna hear.
Yeah, you get props over here.
When I'm out of Chicago, you know what I wanna hear.
Yeah, you get props over here.
Out in D.C., you know what I wanna hear.
Yeah, you get props over here.
Real niggas do real things, and that's a fact. And real niggas can leave big holes in niggas' backs. And your life sounds like a heavy price to pay for some bullshit that you ain't even had to say. But don't sweat that, cause I'ma let you keep your head. If I wanted you killed, you'd already be dead. I got a lot of things to do, a lot of money to make. I got no time for you and all the moves you fake. Taking care of business, yeah, without no doubt. And I'ma make $1 million, kid, before I'm out. Yeah, I gotta give a shout to my peeps in Corona. Going hand in hand, getting loot on the corner. Life is full of stress and it wrecks my brain. So I puff the Buddha bless and destroy the pain. I got a lot of things to do, a lot of money to make. I got no time for you and all the moves you fake.